Yes, you're wrong, the podcast where you talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, and Shelby and I finally have gotten our act together and are like, you know what? Maybe we should have another podcast guest on. Yeah. Speaking that it's been like, I don't even know. Who was the last guest that we had on here? Your sister, maybe?
Yeah, or I was going to say Sierra, probably.
Or Sierra, yes. Well, Sierra is back, our book colleague, special reporter.
Hello, everyone. Very happy to be back.
Yay. Yes. We're glad this worked out.
I know. I've been waiting for Matt to finish this book for a very long time so I could talk to him about it, but I don't think we've talked about it in person. So.
Yes. We're talking about Yesteryear by Caro Claire Burke. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah. I think it's short for Caroline.
Okay, that makes sense. I was like this is a weird name, but whatever.
That's rude. Like, we don't say names are weird on this podcast.
Maybe there was someone with that name already and she had to, it's like a name.
Carolyn Burke does seem like that there probably is somebody who is named that who's doing something.
I know. Other,
so
yeah
Where? But she was, this is her first novel. She has a podcast which I've never listened to, but it's called Diabolical Lies. And I think it mainly started to kind of, or she got big because she started commenting on Ballerina Farm.
Mm-hmm. I've never listened to it either. But
back when that was happening. Because Ballerina Farm, I'm trying to think of the best way to unload all of the context for you.
Yeah, I'm like, I only vaguely know who that is.
Okay, so Ballerina Farm is sort of the poster child for the trad wife movement, which is this idea of people promoting the idea of a traditional wife. So think churning your own butter, braiding your hair, wearing pretty prairie dresses, and homesteading it up on some sort of lovely farm or ranch, usually passed down through family or homesteaded and sponsored by many a beautiful brand. And so Tradwives has been, I mean, it's been around for like a decade probably, right? How old are we? 2016. Yeah,
well, I feel like I started hearing about it. The idea of a traditional wife has been around for,
millennia.
The Tradwife influencer. Yeah. No, I would say, a decade or so. But I think like the past couple of years, it's been more popular with Ballerina Farm and kind of like Nara Smith. Is that her name?
Yes. Although Nara Smith said that she's not a Tradwife when she was on the Call Her Daddy episode, which interesting. Yeah.
Tradwives hate to be self-referenced as a Tradwife, but it does speak for itself. Because Ballerina Farm, she became very popular online because she's beautiful. She has all these beautiful kids. She's doing all these beautiful things. But then there was the pushback about, like, you're a conservative. You're actually not a traditional wife because you're the breadwinner in this scenario as the influencer and blah, blah, blah. And then she had that whole, like, some sort of profile where everyone was like, wow, her husband's like a deadbeat dick.
Yeah, it was in like the Times, which is like
the
it was like the English Times.
Yeah.
And he was just the absolute worst.
He's the worst. And so then everyone was like even more disgusted. And then she had some sort of raw milk controversy as a homesteader must double in. So that's Ballerina Farm.
I think my favorite piece of lore, with especially from that article, was that she really wanted, it was like her birthday or something, and she really wanted like a trip to Greece.
Yes.
And her husband gave her an apron that had pockets for eggs that she could collect.
Yes, that's right.
That was
terrible.
Live in my mind forever.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that she's 36. She lives in Utah. She was a Mormon? She is a Mormon?
I don't think so.
Well, I know her husband's Mormon.
It says on Wikipedia that she grew up Mormon.
Oh, okay.
But maybe she's not any longer.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm so out of it.
No. Well, I more about her lore that I think relates a lot to this book is that she, like the whole ballerina firm, like she went to Juilliard and kind of got married straight out of, I don't think she even finished Juilliard and met her husband, got swept up in that, never really was a professional ballerina. And her husband as well is the like heir to the JetBlue fortune. Like
his dad,
his dad, he actually grew up 10 minutes from where I live in Connecticut in a very, very rich town called New Canaan. And so he, I mean, they were able to do this, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Trad wife, ranch, farm, whatever.
Yeah.
With, you know, millions of dollars as a safety net. So very similar to the book.
She also won Mrs. South Dakota and then Mrs. American, which I didn't even realize were things that you could win. But she is. She's Mrs. American from 2023.
Cute.
Oh yeah, she competed in that like 2 weeks postpartum or something like that. I remember this.
This is all coming back.
Oh no, sorry. She competed and won the title while 20 weeks pregnant with her 8th child.
Yeah.
So Claro, not Claro. So while Caro Claire Burke, she had a podcast where she was talking about Ballerina Farm a lot and then just happened to write I guess like sort of spun it off into writing this novel yesterday, which is, I guess, like sort of loosely based on Ballerina Farm, but with a,
inspired by.
Yes.
Because she, Caro made a point to be like, there's multiple, like, she's been so enmeshed in the trad wife influencer, like, seen that there was a lot of different trad wives who fed her interest in this. Obviously, Ballerina Farm is the one we all know because, you know, she's profiled in the New York Times, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think she's ever gone out of her way. And of course, some of this is to protect her from any sort of legal ramifications. But she's never said like it's explicitly about or inspired by Ballerina Farm or based on anything specific with Ballerina Farm. Just getting that out of the way.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But she did. She pitched. So she got an agent without a book, but with the idea. And then that idea was then pitched with some, you know, some early draft, like early scrap draft of the full story. That was then pitched to the publishers who had a bidding war. And then once that was purchased, Anne Hathaway's production arm immediately purchased the rights. And so there was all this, like, I don't know, bookie controversy where it's like, oh, did Anne Hathaway influence the final script, or did the movie people influence how the book turned out, like knowing that it would be this movie? Like, it was obviously all a very big idea, very splashy, big deal. But I, as Caro explained it, it was just happenstance that it all came together at the same time, which is interesting.
Interesting because I feel like we had, like, obviously, not that many people are reading books anymore. Like, the readership is going down. And so people do sort of glom onto these couple of big books every year. And a lot of times they're books that are like sort of weird word of mouth hits that you really wouldn't expect. Or sometimes, you know, they're by like their follow-ups to authors who already have a platform or whatever. This feels like truly like an industry plant of a book, though, because like this woman was not a writer before. This book came out with like incredible buzz. Everyone was talking about it. It has this film deal. Like, it was just massive from the start, which I don't think we see a lot in book publishing. Mm-hmm. And whenever that happens, I'm always kind of like, why aren't they doing this more? Like, they clearly got this book everywhere from the moment that it was released. Like, why does that, like, why are publishers not leveraging that power more often? Or, like,
well, probably because the stats say that most Americans only read one book a year. So they really have to pick their one horse, you know?
And they said, and it's going to be Yesteryear.
And it's going to be Yesteryear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, what I was going to say about that is I feel like maybe they are trying to do it and they don't actually catch on the way something like Yesteryear has, because it's so of the moment and zeitgeisty. But you can, Matt, you can tell that there was a lot of money put behind this and a lot of effort. And yeah, I'm curious, like, I also am a little skeptical on how much Anne Hathaway and her team were involved in it, because I actually don't have the book in front of me, but I remember in the acknowledgments she said something about, like, Anne Hathaway, thank you so much for reading such an early draft of the book. So I'm like, interesting.
Yeah, it was great. She thanked, Anne Hathaway name dropped right there at the end and mentioned, like, she's excited for the film.
But I don't know why Anne Hathaway would, like, impact the what the book actually is. Because if she buys the film rights, like, she would, she could change anything she wanted in the script. Like, you know?
I think the idea is maybe would that influence how, like, punchy and Hollywoodified you want the ending to be.
Oh, well, yes.
But Caro did say that she had the ending in the initial pitch, like the whole twist and all of that. So, well, I don't know if it really matters.
Because this is a twist novel. So I guess we should sort of set up what it's about. This woman, what is her name? Natalie Heller Mills, is a tradwife influencer, and the book is sort of told in chapters going back and forth. One set is like her life growing up and her path to becoming this tradwife influencer, and the second sort of like dystopian vibe is her waking up in the year 1855 on a ranch that looks like the ranch that she lives on as an influencer, but has all modern convenience stripped out of it. She kind of recognizes her husband, but not really. She has children who sort of look like her old children, but also not quite. And she's like, what happened to my life? She has no memory of how she got there or what is happening to her. She tries to escape at various points and it doesn't work. She gets dragged back and is sort of like forced to live this homesteader life. But she can't remember how she got there or how she signed up for this. She does remember her life in the modern world. So she's like, how did I get transported back to 1855? And the book is, you know, sort of slowly moving toward this convergence point where you're going to find out, like, how did she get here? What happened? Is this a reality show? Did she find a time machine? Like, is she living a double life somehow? Like what is going on? So there is this like big twist that's really easy to sell. But I imagine if you're the author, like, and you like, yes, that's a good pitch twist. But I think like immediately the publishers are going to be like, okay, well then what's like, what's the answer to that? So I think, it's like she would have to have that when she was pitching.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just an interesting, like, I don't know, kind of vision of the future of publishing and movies having to work together, whether that means creatively like planning or just the partnership of immediately naming like this is going to be a movie with a big star, like that means it's a good book to read, so like get in on it while you can. Because you almost started to see that with like Project Hail Mary too, where Andy Weir like sent it to Ryan Gosling and was like, please, I want you to produce this. And so that was already in the works before the book was even published. Which is a a convergence of our short attention spans and sort of like the need to jump on something while it's hot.
But it is weird though. I sort of feel like that this would be an Anne Hathaway vehicle. I don't know if this
really.
Well, Anne Hathaway loves a weird choice.
It makes total sense. Like. That she, like, this does feel like something that she would be in, but just like age wise, so much of the book is like the main character as like in her early 20s. And I just don't know that we're going to like convincingly have Anne Hathaway play like I think she makes sense for like the older plot lines, but I'm like, does that mean that they're going to get a 20-year-old to also play like a younger version of her, or are they just going to try to like age her down with like wigs or something? I'm like, I am a little intrigued.
Once she gets the baby out, she'll get on her Botox routine.
She doesn't look 22.
She does. Yeah, I thought it. Yeah. I think she's gonna be
she's gonna be in the Harvard dorm. Like,
don't you think it'll be like It Ends With Us, where they'll have like a younger cast?
I don't know.
I didn't see It Ends With Us. Is there a young Blake Lively in that movie?
Yeah, yeah, looks
shockingly like her. But I don't know. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess because Anne Hathaway, because she's like 42, right?
Yeah,
right.
She could read like 32,
right? Yeah,
but yeah, young 20s. I'm curious how they'll do it.
Yeah, because we actually don't know like the time frame. How much time has passed in this book? Especially because what's interesting in the setup is everything set in our present modern day is a single day where she's like going to work. She's dealing with this like issue between her husband and her manager and her father-in-law. And that's all a single day.
Right.
And then the frame story too is a single interview.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only real movement we have is these 1850s styled flash sideways. Right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
There's modern day, like you said, is like the one day. But a good, like I would say half the book is the story leading up to how we got to the modern day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even most of the like flashback stuff is when she's younger. Like I feel like it fixates heavily on like her in college and the years sort of like immediately after that. I feel like if Daisy Edgar Jones or somebody was playing this role, you could convincingly you could convincingly be like, okay, like she, like you could kind of see her as a college student, and then they could like, you know, put some gray hairs on her and whatever and call her a 45-year-old. Like there's a
path. Anne Hathaway is gonna chew this up. Like she's thirsty for this type of role.
It's gonna be like Pen 15. Like she's gonna play all ages as herself, and everyone else is gonna
and
be
we'll just have to deal with it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That'll be her shtick.
Iconic.
I look forward to it.
Okay, so Sierra, tell us how like you encountered this book and what your sort of like thoughts were before you read it and why you read it and like what your kind of general takeaways were after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I had heard about this book when it first was going through all of the publishing pitching wars. Matt and I have a friend who used to be in publishing. Now she's kind of non-publishing anymore, but at the time she was in publishing and she had been going through this and she was like, this is going to be big when it comes out. Kind of forgot about it till earlier this year. And then it was absolutely everywhere. My book club was talking about it. We didn't actually read it for book club, but I had to wait a long time to get it to the library. And then I finally got it and read it in 2 days. And mostly because I wanted to get to the twist at the very end, which was everyone. I don't know how you guys feel about how you consume a book knowing there's a twist. I kind of like when you don't know there's the twist and then it just comes at you. Because I feel like you're like looking for clues as you know there's a twist coming at the end.
But you kind of know, like, even if you didn't know anything about this book when you picked it up and started reading it, I think you would realize that there has to be some sort of twist, like, the moment you get to that first chapter, which is in the 1850s.
Yeah, you should know why like this is happening.
Yeah.
Is it the Truman Show? Is it a Christmas Carol? Is it something else? Like, what's going on?
We'll get to spoilers in a bit, but did you like it? Like what was your vibe once you finished it?
I feel like it's such a medium of middle of the road for me. Okay. I was expecting a lot from it. I really was excited about the whole trad wife of it all. I expected a little bit more of a satirical look at it and more of a analysis and what the trad wife trend means, especially in modern day, and a little bit of an analysis. I think this was pitched as a high concept book and it was such a good concept, and I felt a little cheated that there was so much kind of leading up to the trad wife of it all. Anytime they would flash back to leading up to it, I was like, oh, like I wish we were still on yesterday or farm or ranch or whatever. But then also the 1800s part, I was just bored because she was just like cooking and tending the fire.
Getting slapped around. Yeah.
Exactly. So what the twist really got me, I did not expect what it was going to be, which we'll talk about later, I'm sure. But I enjoyed reading it. I think she did a really good job at creating a very strong voice for Natalie. Mm-hmm. Like, you really do hate her, which I think is so fun.
Yes.
In a book, like, I'm not someone who thinks, like, oh, you need a likable main character. Yeah. I think that's really boring. So you do – both are like, oh, my God, I can't believe she's doing some of the things she's doing, while also being like, I get it.
Yeah.
You're married to a jerk.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Yeah, I had the same a similar situation where it was like once the book was, you know, the promo for it started, it was on my radar. And I think I like saw a conversation with the author, with someone else who I like. And so I was like, oh, okay, like this isn't just like a book talk, like bad Colleen Hoover type. So I picked it up and I also gobbled it down. I feel like, yeah, I went into it thinking like, okay, yeah, this is just going to be sort of a splashy, you know, thriller adjacent type of high concept thing. And so I really enjoyed it. I thought it was like nasty and Natalie as a narrator was just like so compelling to sit with, because and I listened to the audiobook, and so every time she was cursing out these women in her mind, like it just it was such a good propulsive read. And so I was more engaged with it and like willing to just see it as a singular character study rather than like a full recon on like the trad wife trends and what it means for us. And then the twist, it was like, I still don't know if I get it. And I still don't like, I don't actually love like the final chapter where you get a perspective from her daughters. Cause I felt like that was sort of a cheat, like to add some sort of hope at the end of a very, you know, nasty
bleak
narrative. Yeah. But I ultimately, I thought it was a good, fun, interesting, thought-provoking read. And so then watching the discourse sort of, you know, because when something big comes out, all the excitement is at the top. But then once more people read it, there's all these like think pieces and hot takes and all of this. And so
yeah,
that beast becomes more like over the top maybe than it needs to be for what this book is. But ultimately, I still think I would say it's a good book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like I had a good time reading it. I just was, I felt a little like I was expecting one thing and got another.
Yeah. Yeah,
but at the end of it, yeah, like when you brought up the audiobook, I was like, maybe I should reread this
And
listen to it because I think that'd be really fun.
She was great. Yeah.
And just like revel in all the talk Fox she has for the.
Yeah.
Did she call them like the nasty? What were they?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The ladies that would talk about her.
Oh, yes.
Angry Woman.
Right? Yeah, the Angry Women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But Matt, you're the most recently read.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what finally pushed you to the
edge?
Well,
my book club decided to read it. So that's that's why I ended up reading it. Because this was big on TikTok. Like, I obviously saw it on my social media feeds. I feel like I, like you, Shelby, like, sort of thought that this was maybe more in the Colleen Hoover, like, vein of things. And while I do have some friends, both of you included, who, like, have good taste in reading and who, like, when they post things, I will be like, oh, okay, like, let me, like, take note of this. I also have friends who I sort of use in the opposite direction. You have bad taste in books. And they were all like, oh my gosh, like yesteryear is so good. So I was like, oh, this means that this is actually terrible. Like I have no interest in this. And somebody in our book club said before we picked this book, like, yeah, I feel like that's one of those books for people who like don't read very much.
Yeah. That like twists like this, like break
them. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Where they're like, this was crazy. And he was like, you know, some people like don't really realize that reading is fun, and so then you know they get a book that's like interesting and they're less excited about the book itself and more excited about like the prospect that they read a book and had a good time doing it. Like, and don't, like, you know those people. I was a little bit trepidatious going into it, but then instantly I thought that her voice was so strong, mm-hmm. and the writing I think is really, like, solid that I enjoyed it, and I read it really quickly. And I think there's so, like, this book is, like, bites off a little bit more than it can chew, I think, at various points. Like, it's hitting the intersection of so many different mm-hmm. topics with, like, politics and religion and gender and, you know, like, I don't know, motherhood, all of these different, of these different aspects. And then you throw on top of that, like, the twist and these two different time periods and the narratives that, like, there was so much meat on the bone, and there were sections that I feel like this could have been, like, not that I would necessarily want, like, a series, but I'm like, I think that this could have been a longer book, or a book that, like, sort of delved into different aspects to maybe say something more pointed or coherent, because it felt like at times we were just, like, blitzing through stuff, and you're like, mm-hmm. oh, I think that there's something interesting to be said about this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the politician's family, or like these women that she's going to college with, or like her parent, her mom, or whatever, but then sort of just, like, brushed by it. Yeah. But I really enjoyed it. I did not see the twist coming. Like, I knew that there was a twist, but I wasn't expecting it to be what it was. And I also think, like, growing up mm-hmm. at, like, in a world that with a lot of, like, trad wives, like, I think my mom would probably be considered a trad wife, and also just, you know, like, I was homeschooled. It was very religious. Mm-hmm, like, lots mm-hmm. of people I was friends with, like, became trad wives. It was fascinating to see that, like, lifestyle depicted. And in some ways, I thought things were really accurate. In other ways, I was like, oh, I, like, don't think that's why they actually do that, or what their motivations are. But, yeah, it was very, like, well worth reading. And I think my book club liked it more than we thought we were going to. Mm-hmm. And we've read some pretty terrible books in the book. So I'm always happy when it's something that I'm not like, I want to peel my face off.
No, I think this movie, I mean, I think this book was protected by its, like, rapid fire style, because I think if you did try and spread it any more, then it would just kind of fall apart like cotton candy. Like, I don't think there was enough substance to really examine the relationships beyond what she did. And I don't mean that to, like, criticize the author. I think she's a strong writer, and I'm curious to see what she does next. But I think since this premise is so high concept and kind of bonkers, it had to just get to the point as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And even now, like, I think the criticism has turned around to be like, well, that wasn't actually good. And I don't know if I agree with that.
As it always is.
Yeah.
Because I was just like, bad. There was like a backlash instantly because people love to be contrarian about everything. Yeah. Yeah. And then I feel like now there's almost like a backlash to the backlash.
Exactly.
Like, hey guys, like, this tangled was web. This was fun. This was, you know, light a summer read that was interesting, and it wasn't like trying to tackle everything and answer the question of, like, are trad wives right for our society? Because, like, I don't think anyone can answer that.
Yeah. And it was like an accessible entry point to have conversations about, like, those themes. Sure. And I think that's always a pleasant surprise for people who are mostly usually talking about, like, ACOTAR, you know? So it's like, at least there is, like, some substance to be found. She sounded so smug, and I'm sorry. But it just, it's like a good
podcast. Where can we be smug these days?
You know? It's a good conversation. It's like, anytime you talk to someone about this book, you have a good time. Like, it's like, there's so much to talk about that it becomes, like, better than just, you know, dreamily describing, like, a romance or romance.
Because there's some wild shit that happens in this
book. Yeah. Speaking of, so should we talk about the modern day, and then when she wakes up in the yesterday?
Yeah, let's talk about the modern day stuff first, I guess, and then we can pivot to the 1850s stuff, which I agree with Sierra was like boring.
It's a little boring.
And once we got to like the third chapter on that, and it was like, oh, she's running away again. But I was like, okay, we got it. Like I don't need this. Like maybe give me two chapters of the like regular stuff, and then maybe a page of her
How much
picking apples or whatever.
Bad sourdough can
we make? Right. Yeah. Because Natalie starts out, she's a surprisingly smart kid who's kind of awkward and uninterested in the life she was presented, finds a way out of it, and goes to, is it Harvard in the book?
Yeah, she goes to Harvard.
Okay, yeah. And I loved this part where she's in Harvard. She has her roommate, Rena, who she judges and hates and despises. And you can feel this sliding doors moment where if she'd found people who challenged her and she'd allowed herself to be challenged, she could have been a different person, but she closed the doors immediately because she felt isolated or othered by everyone or everyone around her and how it wasn't living up to her expectations.
Yeah, it was a bit of a self-segregation.
Yeah.
Well, that the doors were open to kind of accept these people and learn. And learn from them. And she just was like, no, these people are not who I want to be around. And it was just plain rude to them.
Yeah. So nasty.
Well, because it's she grows up Christian and her mom tells her that their dad abandoned them. Is that the backstory there? But
something
but that's actually sort of not true. We learn later. But yeah, so she's a Christian and is very self-reliant because it was just her mom, her sister, and her. But she was always really smart, so she gets taken, or she goes to Harvard, which her family is sort of shocked by. Why would you want to go there? Everybody there's a heathen. And I felt like that was straight out of a playbook from childhood of people were constantly saying if you go to one of these schools, they're going to try to indoctrinate you. and there will be classes where they're stand up if you're a Christian. And then if you do, everyone will laugh at you and say that you're stupid. And so I feel like I did not go to a public or to a quote unquote secular college, but I was well prepared. Okay, if you do, you're gonna have to do battle for the Lord because these people are gonna be out to get you.
Yeah. Same.
I did not.
I did. Sierra was the person.
Sierra was Rena. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I got to tour Sierra's college with Sierra, just this spring, and walk by her sorority house. Which I'm sure was filled with evil and sin.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. No, it was very. I mean, Matt and I talk a lot about growing up evangelical or whatever. Yeah. However, we want to lump in Mormonism, but
growing up in Texas, I feel like I got your experience light,
exactly.
And I also went to school, my high school is right next door to a Mormon. I went to school I knew 25, 30 Mormons. So
congrats.
I was, I know a little bit more than most people and have been horrified since I was 14.
In
context.
But no, it was a fun part of the book and I think some criticism came from Caro not specifying what religious background she was or what specific sect this character belonged to. I think it's an easy out because there's so many different types of evangelical churches and various. It's hard for me to fully understand because Mormonism is so there is one leader and one church and one belief system. But I didn't mind it. It felt like they captured enough of the essence of what that mindset feels like that it was easy for me to project my own experience onto it. And I'm sure other people could do the same. But it didn't really bother me that it was never specified or really she didn't really seem to believe in something. And That's some people criticize that as like shallow writing, but I felt like it was an intentional character choice because so Christians don't actually have specific, you know, personal faith beyond the culture of it.
Yeah. To me, it captured, and this is going to be like a sweeping generalization for Christians in general, so this might get me in trouble, but I feel like it really captured the idea that some Christians have of just the superiority complex that – like, you know, what they believe is better just because they are a Christian. It doesn't actually matter what you're believing in or what you're preaching. You're just like, well, I'm a Christian. What I say is better. And then you can just be an absolutely awful human being. but you're like, but I'm a Christian. I go to church every Sunday, which I've seen so much in Texas. And I didn't really notice until the end when I was talking to other people that they didn't specify religion. And I was like, oh, yeah, like I just – to me, it was just a blanket.
Yeah.
Like Christian, a little bit more evangelical than not. But yeah, I didn't mind it. And it was an interesting choice, but it worked.
So I wrote about this a little bit on my Substack. And then one of my like old college acquaintances sent me an email about it. And she's like a little bit more liberal, I would say, but still like Christian and, you know, like married, has a couple of kids. And she was saying that she like felt like that the book didn't necessarily differentiate enough between like people who are like actually Christians and doing this type of thing for like like true like Christian purposes, and then people more like Natalie who are like nominally Christian but sort of it feels like using that as, I don't know, like a reason to kind of be selfish in certain regards. And I do think that is like a fascinating concept in general, not necessarily just with the tradwife thing, but just like about Christians that doesn't get talked about a lot in the media of like, you have this group of people who are like extremely devout and doing things for like extremely devout reasons. And then you have a whole nother group of people who are sort of like co-opted onto that. And I feel like in my experience, like going to college, a lot of the more devout people have since like become more liberal, where the less devout people, like the worst people who I went to college with, like today, like the craziest MAGA Trump people are not the people who were like the very Christian, like goody two shoes, like going to more chapels than they needed to in college. Like the, all of the crazy Republican people are the people who were like in the sort of like partying groups in college, who like I would have said at the time, like, oh, I don't even think they're Christian necessarily. They're just here. And now they're the ones like really carrying the torch. So I did think that was kind of an interesting thing that like sort of is at the periphery of this novel that she never really gets into. But
isn't Natalie's existence as the narrator her getting into it? Because Natalie, as an unreliable narrator, nonetheless, like points out, or at times seems like to admit that she doesn't actually care about Jesus or.
But then or at like, other times she sort of does. So it's kind of.
I mean, to me, it just shows that like she clearly has no idea who she is.
Exactly. Right.
Never takes the time to actually explore it and just uses this as a crutch. And.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it feels like. Because I think some of the. Yeah. To like circle through the criticism, it's like this is a very specific story about a very specific person. And so she isn't trying to say something about Christianity in general or, you know, motherhood in general. It's like it all comes down to this very unreliable singular narrator. And so that makes it hard to be like prescribing it to the culture at large. And so either that works for you or it doesn't. But I feel like it's sort of like the trend on, you know, social media where it's like, well, I can't eat beans, so what's the recipe for me? Like if you find a And so it's like I think like having that email, it's like, well, yeah, I don't think Caro, Clara, Burke is trying to say something specific about all Christians everywhere.
Right.
It's just she happened to find this nasty narrator she wanted to sit with who was sort of waffling in her faith.
Yeah, because there's pieces of it that sort of feel like satire at times, mm-hmm. but I feel like mm-hmm. it never quite like goes there fully yeah. because, yeah, I sort of don't know that the author knows yeah. exactly what she would want or like that's has true. Been in that world enough yeah. to know. It's like yeah. I could write a book like up and have a character who's like vaguely Mormon and does, yeah. you know, sort of whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like I couldn't ever write a book that's like a satire of Mormonism mm-hmm. in any mm-hmm. sort of pointed mm-hmm. way because I don't like I yeah. haven't lived it. I yeah. don't know enough yeah. about it.
Yeah.
And I think one of the issues that I was interesting that I thought was interesting with the book, but she never totally dived all the way into it, is I think the whole idea of trad wives that are is wrapped in with Christianity is that, you know, an actual traditional wife is completely subservient to her yeah. husband, especially in Christianity as well. It's just you're completely subservient to your husband and God. Whereas a trad wife influencer is the breadwinner of the family, is the one bringing in millions of dollars. And it's like that mm-hmm. that fight that she has internally with being subservient to her husband while also recognizing her husband's an idiot. And
yeah. Well, which is also like a point of the...
Like, could have been the villain, but I just thought was ridiculous and kind of hilarious.
Yeah. Because Caleb is, like, presented as pretty immediately impotent. Like, he can't get it up for her.
Yes.
He has no purpose or drive or interest. He's the rich man in the – he's the rich boy in college she meets and she latches onto and marries very quickly and decides to have kids very quickly. Well, no, she marries him very quickly, realizes he's an idiot and won't, like, take care of him. The dad is like a state political leader with national aspirations, and he gives her like a breeding contract, right?
Yeah,
yeah. That like, was like well, have well, like, a baby, we'll fund
your life as long as oh you yeah have heirs, basically.
Yeah, nasty. And she's like, that
done.
Yeah, that was like the Caleb and the father-in-law of it all were the weaker points for me because. I mean, I found Caleb interesting and he's sort of in the peripheral because the big moment in the modern piece is that she finds out her social media manager is having an affair with her husband who mm-hmm. can't get it up for her, but is getting yeah. it up for this liberal, you know, loser who she hates. And then you think it's going to be sort of like a sex scandal, but what the actual controversy is that Natalie attacks the woman and like tries to physically assault her for ruining her life. And then I don't know. I felt like the manosphere of it all was the part that felt thinnest where she just threw yeah. in buzzwords. And I wasn't like sure. Caleb didn't make sense to me as a person, especially seeing how he turned into what he did in the other timeline.
I mean, yeah. I can sort like, I think I like the initial part of their relationship as like, here is somebody who has yeah. been like bitter and secluded and doesn't and is very like unsure of herself. And the moment the first person comes along who's like nice to her in any capacity, she's like, great, like, let me get married to this person, which I think happens yeah. a lot in real life. Yeah. And that's how you end up in these like weird marriages where you're then like, because someone was nice to you when you were 19 for 2 months, like now you're trapped with them for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I can see how like because I feel like this happens a lot in New York with people where you have the child of like a famous person or a successful person who doesn't quite have to work, but mm-hmm. like, but doesn't feel like they can really just like slough off. So they're always like kind of doing something or they have some sort of weird project, but it never really goes anywhere. And also those projects like never have any stakes to them because they're sort of like backed by like their rich parent, you know? So it's,
Matt, you're just describing Next Gen NY.
Well, yes, yeah. And that is
you're describing Brooke Smart.
No, yeah. Truly, exactly. Like, great point. But I'm like, I think that the so I can see like him sort of like just stumbling along, and then it eventually also sort of like being resentful, but not wanting to obviously resent himself and his laziness. So he like resents her instead. But yeah, I thought that there was a lot that they could have mined there, especially given the like political nature that was woven in with all of that. But because they spend so much time in the like 1885 plot line, and then also they're trying to get to this like affair and sort of the aftermath of the affair and whatever, that that the marriage gets a little bit short shrift, which I wish that they had spent more time with.
To me, that could be the thing that you could dive the deepest on, because it is just like one marriage. And what I think is the most interesting about tradwife influencers in general, and bringing in the politics and, you know, the religion is necessary, but those could almost be two other books.
Like even just the concept of Caleb being such a loser, and then him turning into such a violent, you know, awful.
Should we get into the twist?
Person?
I want to mention one more thing before we get into the twist, which is like the influencer angle of the story.
Because she's
an influencer, but then at various points you realize that like she's lying about things, she's staging things, her house is built in a certain way so that it looks older, but like there's actually modern conveniences. She goes to Target at one point and then like runs into somebody, and she's worried that then that's gonna like get out that she actually goes to Target when she claims she doesn't. Her husband has this like supposedly all natural farm, but she's on the sly like paying workers like, to spray.
Iconic.
Which I think also is another element. Like, I think that you could write a book about just like influencers in general and how like that staged life does not mirror what is actually going on, and how many discrepancies there are whenever you watch an influencer's videos of like, okay, well, what does this look like in real life? I thought that some of those sections were the most interesting sections of the book, but again, they were really like sort of breezed by because we had the bigger fish to fry.
And I mean, the whole idea of influencers, when you really get down to it, is like, is yes, they're showing a day in their life or whatever, but is anything really real when everything is content?
And
I think if the Cut released an article like a week or two ago about how like, is the influencer declining because things change so fast that nothing's really like, everyone says they crave authenticity. Like, I love her because she's so authentic, whatever. But I think people are just changing at the whims of what the algorithm wants. I did think that part worked really pretty well for me, of her, the little details of how she was behind the scenes changing her life to make it look even more rural and rustic and traditional, when really it was all smoke and mirrors.
Well, it's like even with like a day in the life, like Get Ready With Me video, it's like the person has to get out of bed, set up the tripod, then get back into bed and pretend to wake up. It's like every time you watch one of those, it's like, okay, well, this like isn't accurate. And I wish that you would like just be like, you could just film yourself like, hey, I just woke up or whatever. But it's like they don't do that. They want the getting out of bed shot, even though it's like that's not them actually getting out of bed, which... Anyways.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. And so she, in the modern day, she has five kids, and she's
pregnant, I think.
And she's pregnant. Yes. Okay. Yeah. And so that's when the fallout happens and she wakes up in this other timeline. And
not
so,
pregnant.
Not pregnant. Not
pregnant, but also has kids.
Yes.
That kind of look like her, but don't, and don't look like her kids. It's very strange.
Because she has four kids in the 1850s timeline.
Right. And her oldest daughter in the original timeline is named Clementine. And then when she gets to the 1850s timeline, she has a daughter named Mary, who sort of looks alike and has somewhat similar energy, but Mary's kind of like a stone cold bitch of a daughter. And is basically like running this farm because her mom is
her
crazy
mom
and her dad
sense.
Doesn't know how to do anything. And she's like 14 and bossing everyone around.
Yeah. And we do spend a lot of time on the ranch, and she is cognizant enough to remember her modern life and to recognize pieces of this farm. And so her theory becomes someone's filming her, someone's trapped her here in a sort of gotcha moment, or God is testing her in some sort of metaphysical, I don't know, tear in the space. Yeah.
She finds like a lav mic or like a piece of a mic at some point on the ground. And she's like, oh, like I'm in like a Truman Show kind of thing. But so while you were reading the book, I guess start with Sierra, like what did you think that the twist was going to be? Did you have any idea?
I think when I said it from the beginning, I really thought it was one of two things, where it was like the Truman Show. It was a reality show happening and there was cameras everywhere, which is what she thinks at the beginning. So I was like, maybe that's not it. I really did want it to be time travel or some sort of like test that is happening that then like she'll kindred. Go back. Yes, she'll go back to modern life. And I don't know. Maybe this is too real, like pie in the sky for me. But I really thought that she was going to like travel back to her regular life, take what she'd learn and become just a better person, or just like kind of go off the rails with her tradwife thing and be like, look, this is all a complete shtick. Like, this is not who I am, and use her platform for something completely different and something a little more like good and effective. So I thought it was like one of those two things. And what about you guys?
Yeah, I felt like it would be, I felt like I knew it would be inconceivable to me. And so I didn't really have any guesses. I was like, this doesn't make sense. So now the joy was whether or not she would stick the landing.
Yeah.
And I think it was kind of like a messy, like 8 out of 10, like, you know, she stumbled at the bit there. But generally, I wasn't sure where she'd go with it. And I feel like it being so bonkers allowed me to give her a little more grace for how maybe it didn't actually work that well.
Well, the, because she, the character sort of thinks it's a reality show. The first chapter, she's like answering interview questions, which I think
that was confusing.
In the grand scheme of things is like her, like in the sit down interview at the end, is that what, like that, those are supposed to be from?
That was confusing to me. I thought it was either that or it was the interview that she's doing to like when she thinks she's getting canceled and has to like defend herself, which I thought were two different things. I don't know if we're supposed to know really.
I think it is. I think it is the sit down interview at the end.
Okay.
So just I
heard throughout.
Yeah.
But since she's answering these questions, I was kind of like, oh, maybe this was like an intake thing. You know, like maybe she signed up for some sort of like government experiment where it was like, we're going to prove to the world that like trad wife actually is the best. So like, I'm going to sort of like bravely be the person who like signs up for whatever this thing is. Because the thing that is most confusing, or like, I think the hardest part to figure out, is that she basically has amnesia. In these 1850 plot lines, like she remembers her old life, but she doesn't remember how she got to the 1850s and how long she's been there or what's been happening. So it's like, well, whatever she would have done, like, sure, she could be on a reality show, but like, did they mind wipe her? Like, how does that?
Like, which makes like that makes time travel seem more realistic. Like, how does she even get there?
But I guess to do the full spoilers,
it was psychosis.
It was psychosis, but it was crazy. It's basically like the twist in The Village where he like goes crazy.
Seriously though.
Yes. And then like, so after like her scandal with the, where she like assaults her producer and the producer claims that it's a lesbian sexual assault, which I think is very funny. that she like has a break with reality. She goes back to the farm. She's like, we're getting rid of all modern conveniences. She takes out like all the technology on the farm. It's like just her on the farm, like with her family and like, you know, no running water, no toilets, like whatever. And she lives there, I guess, for, you know, a period of like 20 years, 15 years, something like that, in this like old backwoodsy time. And then at a certain point, she begins to have like a mental break and gets amnesia. So she can't remember that she's the one who's like decided to be there. But the whole time, they're actually in the future, not in the past. And her husband is like going off to like this secret barn in the woods every day to sort of like hang out with their grown sons and get like more like modern, you know, groceries and stuff, which then they bring to the farm.
I need to interject because this is like the most ridiculous part of the book for me. The barn literally has the word manosphere above it, because he discovers the manosphere at some point and is like, oh, this sounds great.
That's where he finds his sexual power. That's where he reclaims his masculinity.
Right.
He doesn't have to jizz into a cereal bowl anymore.
Yeah. Well, because, okay, I read this in April, so, and I was trying to find a summary of, like, how the kids break down. Because, yeah, the twist is she wakes up and realizes she's in the future. She has her original kids, but they're all adults now, and she restarted a family by having these newer kids. So, okay, so.
And that, I believe, like, the kid she was pregnant with in the modern timeline or whatever is Mary.
Okay.
So like all of the kids that she's like, who are these children? Literally are her children who she's
right.
Yeah. So there's birthing them. There's Mary, and then there's two sons.
Okay.
And then there's a daughter who, like, in the sort of narrative of the story, you think is a small child.
Yeah.
And then you realize later is not a small child, but is actually, you know, like a 12-year-old, 13-year-old something.
Right.
With just like mental disabilities.
Stunted growth. Yes. Yeah.
And so she thinks it's like a baby. But the five children who are alive in the like present day section of the book are all grown and have left the farm.
Right. So Clementine came back to the farm and was like, I finally have the papers to get
my siblings.
My siblings.
Yes.
And you're going to jail for child abuse.
Right.
But why did it take so long? Like, what was Clementine?
Yeah.
Where was that chunk of time?
Well, when Matt says, like, you know, all our children leave the farm, I thought two of her oldest
sons stay.
Come back and, like, kind of, like, look over the trailer. Farm.
They pretend to be, like, neighbors. Because one of the plot lines is that Mary is sort of in love with one of the boys who she thinks is the neighbor, like, but actually it's her older brother.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't they, like, bring in fruit so they don't starve, and the fruits actually have, like, supermarket stickers on them and stuff like that. And that's another one of the clues.
Right.
She's like, something's going on. So yeah, that confused me too. But it was almost like maybe they kept it going on because the brothers were there and were at least like, okay, yeah, this is bad, but we can't do anything about it. But at least the brothers are looking over our younger siblings. Right. Kind of. No, I'm with you, Shelby. That was like, there's so much. Why did it take so long if Clementine was like actively trying to get these kids for so long?
Well, and Caleb, come, like, more, you know, like child services people weren't like showing up at various times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at the end, Clementine takes Mary and the boys, but the choice is Natalie stays, right? She like takes Caleb's hand and stays on the farm.
Right. But then she goes to jail.
But then she goes to jail because. Okay, so then, because of the child abuse.
Right.
Which isn't funny, but it was bonkers. So yeah, she's like a 50-year-old woman now. Didn't know it because there's no mirrors in her home. She has these replacement children who Mary is like the village where she doesn't know there's a modern world. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. I think that they decided that they were going to raise the children so that the children did not know that they were living in the modern world. So Caleb obviously knows, and she theoretically knows, but then because of the amnesia, then she keeps forgetting.
So I think she is deluded in her own.
Right. I think that Natalie and Caleb must have set up with the older sons at some point, like, hey, the little kids think that they live in the 1850s. We're going to keep that up. Like, you go pretend to be the neighbors and you can sort of like bring us groceries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to conveniently forget. The part that I thought was the worst is like which I understand why you need it for the narrative structure, but it's like the very convenient amnesia of like,
it's not amnesia though, Matt. Things. It's psychosis. It's like a literal mental breakdown. It's protective walls your brain is putting up because of trauma.
Right, but it's like certain, but it's like the sections that she remembers are the, like, she remembers all the old stuff. She just doesn't remember this, like, very specific time in the middle where she decides that she's going to be, like,
Yeah, that's literally, like it's mental it's
psychosis.
Yeah.
It's like, people, yeah.
You know, when you have, you know, multiple personality disorder, it's like something traumatic happens and then your personality breaks off. It's just, I mean, I don't claim to understand it.
And
entirely,
she,
But the part that she was forgetting theoretically
was the traumatic part. No, it's because it's right after she's found out, she loses her social standing. She's on the outs. She's been canceled and she no longer has the life she envisioned for herself. And so she kind of just like mentally falls apart. And
yeah, your brain shuts it off to protect yourself.
Yeah.
But she didn't forget that she was living on the farm. Like, she's been there, like, 15 years.
But that wasn't really traumatic in the beginning. Like, the trauma came after. Yeah.
I think it's, like, not a perfect, like, even the author admitted, she's like, I'm not a mental health expert, but I didn't want to diagnose her with something specific. Mm-hmm. So this is all inspired by the idea of how psychosis can sometimes come on and like how it reads. So there's like a level of reality to it without having the specificity. And that's why I think it was clever to have sort of the Easter egg moments where she would forget what she was doing in the present time. Like when she was an early mother, she like had that moment where she forgot to make dinner and her husband comes in at like 9 p.m. and is like, what have you been doing all day? You've just been standing at the sink for 12 hours. And so I think it just, she had a fragile mental state. And then whatever happened after she lost everything made her spiral and continue to sort of contort her mental, capabilities.
I think one of the more interesting like Easter eggs, if I were to read this again, is that I think you realize at the end that a lot of the things she says in her mind, she actually said out loud and she doesn't realize. Like she kind of like curses the lady out in Target. And I think she actually says those things out loud.
Oh,
and when she's cursing out her roommate in college, I think she says those things out loud. And that's why they're like, this girl is nuts. Like, why are we going to be friends with her?
Yeah.
And I think that is another thing of her slipping where she doesn't know she's having these like, little mental just breaks that is causing her to say her inner thoughts out loud and causing people to really just not like her. And I think, like reading that back, you're like, oh, she isn't a reliable narrator.
Yeah.
And so to question her narration as she's going along and being like, wait, I think you might have said that stuff out loud. It's fun to think about and also like, pretty clever.
Yeah.
Thank God I do not have that problem. I would be in big trouble very quickly if I was saying everything I was thinking.
No, I think in general it was like, I think the twist only helped make the other pieces more compelling rather than making the 1850s life make sense. Because I do think there's enough holes with like child neglect and how that would have, you know, I think there's still people who follow like random C-list celebrities who were in like one thing that time. So I think people would have been following this like crashed out trad wife a little more closely to realize like, oh, she's abusing her kids and like maybe someone should go check on her. But
especially given that her husband's family is still like, you know, like
lost his money or something.
Right. But they would have still like there would have been so many articles written about them that someone would have like investigated.
One of my questions too is like, okay, like if we have the older brothers checking in on the family, like couldn't Clementine have them like plant a hidden camera, record its abuse, submit it to the authorities and have them arrested really quickly? I don't know.
Yeah, it was confusing how like much the older brothers were like involved
losers
with everything.
You know, Clementine is the one who has the most trauma from all of this, and I think maybe she when she escaped her mom's grasp maybe she was just like, okay, I'm trying to get away from this, I'm trying to heal.
She had to protect
herself. And when she's healed, she can come back and save these kids. But in the meantime, they're going through, you know, a whole childhood of
I am interested in what the charges would be like, because, like, on one hand, like, yes, you can see, like, that it's abuse, but it's, like, well, like, is not telling your children about, like, computer, like,
I think it is more the physical. I think it like, came down to like, how, yeah, she was malnourished and the little girl wasn't actually, like, little. And it was like, yeah, it was like they were being trapped in a basement for 2 years.
It is crazy that then she thinks that she's pregnant and they're like, no, girl, it's menopause.
Yeah.
you're too old to be having a baby.
Yeah.
What do you mean? She's like, I haven't had a period.
That's right.
That's one of the reasons why the youngest daughter, youngest was named Maeve, I think. And she, like, during birth, because one, she's quite old, and two, they are out in the middle of nowhere. She has, like, the baby was, like, deprived oxygen for a really long time.
That
is why she has, like, some
developmental issues. Yeah.
Which is just, that was the saddest part
for me. It was sad. It was a bummer of an ending.
I'm just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
It really hit me.
Because then the final chapter is, yeah, she's in prison, but she agrees to do this interview with her former college roommate, Rena. Shout out.
Oh, I know.
and so she kind of like, yeah, she kind of tries to explain how it happened. I don't really remember, but I do remember it ends with what is the afterword or the first chapter of her second round of kids' eldest daughter. Mary has written a memoir. Mm-hmm. And the memoir is like, basically, I love the ocean. Is that
what?
Isn't it that she's like, she looks at the ocean and is like, life is good? Or is it sunsets or something?
Yeah,
or?
Yes, because it's like, I feel like the beginnings of books I always remember so much better than the endings of books. Like, I think because it's like you finish it and then you're like, okay, whatever. Where when you're reading it, you know, you're obviously thinking about the beginning over and over and over again.
Because she's like, she hadn't seen the ocean and she goes to the ocean.
Yes.
It's
like she'd always wanted to go to the ocean, but then she couldn't. And then now she...
No, she can't.
I think she didn't even know what an ocean was.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Read about it in books and thought it was like fiction. Yeah, the ending reminded me a lot of the Ruby Frankie case.
Yeah.
Rough. You know, like the memoir coming out after that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just another example of, I think, Caro Claire Burke trying to tackle a lot. With the end, I will say, while reading the reveal in the very end, I could see it reading on film so much more dramatically, like floodlights coming in and staring at the ocean. Well, just like the whole, when you realize, like when Clementine comes to pick
up,
I'm like, oh yeah, this is clearly written for the screen. And I can see this being a much more effective movie ending or like a series ending than the book, and I think you could maybe fill some of those holes a little bit better with more time in a book or like a mini series.
But at the same time, I think that there's like parts of the twist only work because you can't see the thing. Like Maeve like would not work as a twist in a TV show because that she was like a, you know, developmentally
that's the thing, is like she looks like she's 5.
She looks like she's So she's just, it's not like she's like. She should look older, but since she just looks 5, it's like
any of
those tragedies of like.
Yeah, but like she's.
I mean, yeah, it won't be pleasant to see. Right. Yeah.
Like, it's not like she's going to look like a healthy 5-year-old. Like, there's going to be something weird there. Or even the fact that, you know, now she's 50, which I mean, I guess with the Anne Hathaway of it all, like, that's sort of a confusing element in general. But.
I can see them just like smearing some dirt on her face.
Right. Because I feel like the end kind of lost me. And I didn't, I read an interview with the author where she's like, it was important for me to give the daughter's voice because we've had such an unreliable narrator. And I wanted to like end on something more hopeful of like, you don't have to be what your mother was and you don't have to be. Like, you don't have to perpetuate harm. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to choose to find the good type thing. And so it's like, I understand. I don't know how I would have preferred it to end, but I felt like the, like, chapter was kind of a I don't know.
Well, I get the, like, wanting to give a voice to somebody if it's, like, a real person. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, if you're doing the, like, Gianni Versace TV show or whatever. like yes. Like you want to give some sort of acknowledgement to, like, the fact that these victims were real people. But I'm, like, since this book is not, like, these are not real people. And, like, I don't necessarily, like, I think we could have stuck with Natalie and, like, had her reckoning with it, or maybe she, like, I don't know, I mean, I guess, like, or she has some sort of interaction with the daughter that's from her point of view. I don't necessarily think that we needed, like, the memoir chapter, because it did feel like it was sort of, there were too many endings that were going on where it's like, okay, and now she's doing an interview, but, like, previous, and we're also getting, like, bits from the, you know, flashback from the, like, when she assaulted the producer and her husband's having an affair. Like, there was just a lot that was going on in the last, like, 50 pages.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the book, which already was, like, so light in a bunch of different things that it had brought up to tackle, like, that we needed a whole nother section of, like, intergenerational trauma, you know? Like,
the book is, like, 400 pages, which I was kind of shocked by, which reflects how many different things she's trying to accomplish without diving too deep on it.
Yeah.
So, it's hard to wrap that all up at the very end.
So I'll say my least favorite piece, and this is probably true of any book ever, but I felt like the scene where Caleb rapes her, assaults her in the flash sideways chapter was so unearned in that moment. I think the slap was more effective. It was more shocking. It made sense. Yeah. I can see the idea of, like, oh, this man has been so, like, emasculated his whole life, or felt like it, and now he can finally, like, play act as this brawny, I get what I want and my wife has to do what I say type thing. But it didn't feel, like, earned enough, and him hanging out at the trailer, like, watching YouTube, like, Andrew Tate stuff was, like, so, like, not worthy of including a rape scene for me. Yeah. And so that was the one where I was like, okay, that was she didn't need it. So few books need a rape, but also I feel like that was where I was like, okay, you have probably taken on a little too much here. Like, there's too much happening.
Yeah, and like, I mean, just like that whole relationship was so confusing, because it's like, well, they've been on this farm, like, since the, like, farm conversion from modern day to old time. Like, how long were they there? Like, 12 years? 13, like they were there a long time, and then at a certain point she starts to, like, go into psychosis.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Mary is, like, 14 or 15.
So right.
Yeah.
It's like that. But then it feels like he would be dealing with that differently. Like if you were on this farm with your wife who you've been married to for 30 years, and then all of a sudden she, like, started forgetting who she was or what, like,
well, I think that was, he realized he was in power now.
Anytime
he discovered the manosphere of it all, he was like, okay, now, like, I think he did have, you know, the one realization he has in this whole friggin' book is that he's like, oh yeah, like, I now have control over my life. This is truly a trad wife experience. And he likes that power, and he gets off on that power, clearly.
Yeah.
That I agree with you that the rape was unearned and could also have been expressed in other ways. Like, I got the point of it without having to do that. Yeah. And then was also icky of her, like, liking it.
She's very weird. Yeah.
I don't like
that. I forgot about that too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it, like, that, honestly, the Caleb of it is an interesting character of, like, oh, how much does he know? How much doesn't he? Because he does, like, seem to get frustrated when she forgets. So it's a thing that has happened before. So that's another thing, is like, we have seen this moment of lucidity, but this, like, mental break, lucidity, remembering, forgetting again has happened enough that he's, like, annoyed by it and, like, whatever, Mary, deal with it. And so, think it's like, I know, I think he's just chosen, like, I get enough out of this life that I have no qualms with a wife who sometimes forgets who I am.
Yeah, except for then it's like she's her like foot is in the bear trap and the daughter's having to like do stitches for her. Like,
yeah, he's a loser.
I mean, yes, like obviously, but I just
gangrene.
Yeah.
I'm like he wouldn't have been like, okay. Like she knows that. I mean, I'm like, he's either like really like diabolical and I wanted like more of that sort of like showing that intentionality or not.
Because but that's a scary thing, man. Yeah. It can be that simple.
He's not smart enough to be the villain.
Yeah. He's just happy with how the cards have played
out. But he feels like completely fine being like, I would rather have my like wife have sort of amnesia and potentially die of like this injury than cart her to like a hospital, even though she theoretically knows about the
a lot of people right now.
Exactly. Yeah. What does he gain from like he's benefiting like, so much from he's benefiting from this play acting. He's got what he wants, which is
this man's never had power
to feel like a man. Yeah.
And now he feels like it.
His daddy's not telling him what to do. His wife's not telling him what to do. He gets to just play act as
Bear Grylls. But if she dies, like that feels like it's going to be.
Well, he's not Mary thinking forward enough. Yeah.
I'm going to go to my manosphere cabin and use the electricity and watch the YouTube videos.
I know we're going long. I just also want to touch on Shannon, who is
the producer,
who I also found a very compelling character, who's like liberal and doesn't believe in what Natalie is doing, but also needs a job and is sort of like interested in just allowing it to happen. I feel like she could have had a whole story from her perspective. The idea that she had an affair with Caleb was hard for me to figure out what she was. She just was kind of like a bad person who liked him, I guess.
Yeah, it was confusing because also like she moves there, right? Like,
yeah,
like she's not like they live in like rural Idaho, right? Or is it Idaho? Is that where they are?
Yeah.
But she's not from Idaho. It's like she moves to Idaho like to try to get this job, like because she wants to be the producer for this like show.
Because she thinks she's like a feminist icon.
Yes, right. That's what I was about to say. Like, I thought was actually quite interesting about her. It's because when you try to break down the idea of like that we talked about earlier, like why are people so fascinated by tradwife influencers? Yeah. And I think she takes a more feminist approach of like we're reclaiming this. We're reclaiming the role in the house. We are the leaders of the house. And she finds like a feminist lens, whereas Natalie's like, that's not what I was trying to do. Like, what are you talking about? Which I thought was funny. An interesting way to bring her in. But and then she like kind of undermines herself by having the affair with the husband. And I don't know.
And introducing him to YouTube or something. It's like, okay.
I
kind of like introducing Clementine, but like there is a
I couldn't tell if she was like trying to, like if she was sort of like a mole agent at various points or if she was like, because she felt like she had too much agency to just be like accidentally there and then sort of figuring things out. So then I'm like, what did she have the affair like to on get purpose to sort of like bring down the dynasty or like to get her own or like to sort of become famous in her own right?
She didn't seem like she liked Caleb.
Exactly.
She thought he was like an idiot. Like, because he was like, I'm gonna go live with her somewhere, and she's like,
it's like all of the supporting characters, like you kind of can't figure out what exactly their motivations are, and I don't know if that's because the author like didn't like do a good job of figuring out what those motivations are, or because we're getting it through like this unreliable narrator who she is just sort of like get like saying weird pieces. And so some of the stuff that we're learning about these people isn't necessarily true, or there's big gaps. So it's like, what Shannon or Caleb or her mom or whoever are doing like actually does make sense, but just like not in the way that she's describing it to us.
Yeah. Well, she can't envision people having a life outside of her
right.
own sphere, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that circles back to Rena, who I also loved as this sort of like haunting obsession.
Yeah. But like throughout her life.
Rena's total sense to me.
This roommate she had for 2 months, she's like, that bitch, she's so lonely. She's such a loser. She's so unhappy. And it's like, yeah, you're kind of forced to look at it as like, you have the wife who has everything you want, and you have the career woman who has nothing she really secretly desires. But then there's the convergence at the end, and you're like, oh, wait, I actually can't take Natalie's word for this. Like, maybe Rena mm-hmm. is completely happy, and maybe Rena hasn't thought about her a single day of her life, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, like, this is almost too late to introduce this whole idea, but she also, like, really pities her sister and, like, really thinks that she's a loser, too, for, like, not getting away from her husband and stuff like that. But it's, you know, her sister is doing just fine, too, and is having a very similar life to her. But,
Yeah, I loved the Rena. I loved the
Rena stuff was like... funny. Nice full circle for her at the end.
Yeah.
And her being like, why did you call me?
Like, yeah. Yeah. So all in all, I feel like it was a good, fun, provocative read. I feel like I've seen so much worse books get the attention and then totally. The turning of the hate. So it's like, this one I'm fine with. I'm fine with the rise and fall of yesteryear and the rise again when Anne Hathaway stars as 20-year-old Harvard grad.
20 to 55 years old.
Yeah.
You need to play that much.
I guess 18 to 55. Yeah.
Wild.
So much going on. This was better than Strangers, which I will say. I'm thankful that, you know, if we're giving out publishing bumps, that this got one, you know, rather than another version of that.
Yeah. Wait, if there were co-presidents for the Strangers Hate Club, I think Matt and I would be.
Yes.
Wait, which one's Strangers?
Strangers is the Belle Burden memoir about the.
Like, the marriage.
Millionaire woman who like might lose a little bit of money.
Hey, divorce is hard, man. Okay.
So hard.
Especially when you're a multimillionaire.
You might lose your one house, but she lost two. Okay.
But what about her $300,000? To the
yes. Her beach key is really what we're concerned about.
We're gonna get Matt and I started on this.
I almost want to read it just to like, no, I haven't read it, but
you should listen to it.
Okay,
it's fast. It's
okay. Fast, yeah.
I mean, to take it back to yesteryear. Again, I am excited to see what Carol Claire does next because I think if she takes. Even one of the topics that she has here, maybe a little bit more, maybe something she's a little more familiar with than like Trad Wife. And it seems like she's not too familiar with like the Christianity of it all.
Right.
So means she can speak a little bit more too. I think she has the writing skills and like the grasp on her own voice that she could, I would be excited to read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Sierra. It's
literally
lovely to have you back.
Yes. I love talking to you guys about this.
I know. Thank
always,
you.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Good to have some solid conversation, you know, Matt sometimes can't provide the same.
Okay. Hateful. Shelby and I will be back next week, I think, to discuss The Dog Stars, the Jacob
the Looney Tunes movie.
Is that also coming out next week?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll be talking about
double feature.
Yeah. Double feature. the dog stars versus Acme.
Yeah.
The dog versus Acme.
I'll be listening.
Exciting stuff. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.